On this edition, Andrew Harvey shares about radical passion, sacred love, and wisdom in action. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. Andrew Harvey was born in South India in 1952 and lived there until he was 9 years old. It is this early period that he credits with shaping his sense of the inner unity of all religions and providing him with a permanent and inspiring vision of a world infused with the sacred. He left India to attend private school in England and entered Oxford University in 1970 with a scholarship to study history. At the age of 21, he became the youngest person ever to be awarded a fellowship to All Souls College, England's highest academic honor. In 1977, Harvey had become disillusioned with life at Oxford and returned to his native India, where a series of mystical experiences initiated his spiritual journey. And over the next 30 years, he plunged into different mystical traditions to learn their secrets and practices. He met a succession of Indian saints and sages and began his long study and practice of Hinduism. Well, in 1990, he would collaborate with Sogyal Rinpoche and Patrick Gaffney in the writing of the classic book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And in 1984, with a group of French Sufis, he began a 10-year-long exploration and explication of Rumi and Sufi mysticism in Paris. It was in 1992 he met Father Bede Griffiths in his ashram in South India, near where Harvey had been born. It was this meeting that helped him synthesize the whole of his mystical explorations and reconcile Eastern and Western mysticism. Well, in 2005, in the historic Santuario de Guadalupe in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Harvey delivered his vision of the contemporary crisis now confronting us and its potential solution in what he has termed sacred activism, which he sees as a culmination of his life's work. This extraordinary occasion was made into a documentary film by the Hartley Film Foundation. The author of more than 24 books, Harvey was awarded the Christmas Humphrey Prize for A Journey in Ladakh, the Humanities Team Award for his 2010 body of work, an award previously received by Desmond Tutu, and a Knotless Award for The Hope. He is the founder and director of the Institute of Sacred Activism, and he joins us from New York City. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
I have been such a fan of your work over the years, and I was so excited to see this new book out. And so thank you for taking your time to be with us.
Well, this new book, Radical Passion, is a real huge compendium of the whole vision that has shaped my whole life. And now I'm 60. I thought, well, why not put it together in one big book? And here it is.
Early in the book, you write, you say, the passion I'm referring to has nothing whatever to do with emotionalism, theatricality, or even conventional and understandable forms of anger and outrage at injustice. It's a divine and sacred passion, a vast, focused love energy grounded in peace and knowledge of divine identity, increasingly purified of shadow and demonizing judgment, and directed like a laser to the radical and urgent transformation of both our inner version of awakening and our outer practice of political and economic reality. Hoo-ah.
I know.
That's radical passion. So can you talk about this passion and share why this book is so important to us as a culture?
Well, I call my book Radical Passion because I think that that's what we most desperately need at this moment. I think there are a lot of very decent people, a lot of people who are alarmed at the fate of the world, a lot of people who are generous and gentle, but when I travel the world, I see a great deal of paralysis and apathy and simple helplessness before the enormity of the problems that we're facing. And I feel that the most important thing that we need, all of us at this moment, is what I've called radical passion. And what I mean by radical passion is the connection with the passion of the divine for the creation, the passion that's streaming from the mother side of God, the passion that is the central force of our whole evolutionary adventure, the passion that birthed the Big Bang, the passion that blazes in all of the great mystics of the divine love, mystics like Rumi, who wrote perhaps the greatest poem about this divine passion ever written when he wrote, Passion burns down every branch of exhaustion. Passion is the supreme elixir and renews all things. So don't sigh heavily or brow bleak with cynicism and boredom. Dare to look for passion, 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 passion. Futile solutions deceive the force of passion. They are marshy and stagnant water, and they are bandits who distort money through lies. So run, my friends, run far away from all false solutions. Let divine passion triumph and rebirth you in yourself. I think what we need is to let the divine passion that is the core of our evolutionary drive, the core of the creative truth that is manifesting the universe, the core of the motherhood of God, I think we need to let this divine passion deep into our hearts so that it can make our hearts furnaces of charity, furnaces of desire to help, furnaces of divine truth, furnaces of profound compassion for the whole of the creation, so that on a massive scale we can come together as sacred activists and start a grassroots revolution of love in action that can help us, even at this late hour, transform humanity and birth a new humanity and save the creation from further desolation and depredation.
You feature an interview with Fred Gustafson, author of The Moonlit Path, about the influence of the Black Madonna, or Dark Feminine, on the terrorist attack of 9/11. You write in your book, "For me, it seems like the eruption of the Black Madonna into the center of life." Can you share first a bit about what the Dark Madonna is, and then what you mean by the eruption into the center of life that you talk about in regards to the 9/11 attacks and other world calamities that have occurred since that interview?
Well, the motherhood of God, the mother side of God, the Divine Mother, has fundamentally two aspects, which of course are deeply interlinked. The first face, the first aspect, is the generous, nourishing, tender, compassionate side that we all need to be connected with, the side that you can see in wonderful emanations of the Divine Mother, such as Tara and Durga and the Divine Mary, the Mary of the Christian mystical tradition. This aspect is, of course, crucial for us because it's when you turn to the mercy and compassion of the motherhood of God that you become most empowered by divine love. But there is another aspect which is, I think, crucial for the understanding of the great transformation that we are living, and that is the dark feminine, the feminine that is absolutely outraged at our murder of life, at our dereliction of our sacred connection with nature, at our abandonment of the holy in all the different aspects of life. And this aspect of the feminine is terrifying and is also tremendously transforming, because when she starts to dance, when the Kali aspect, if you like, of the feminine starts to dance, and she is dancing in our time as all of the major disasters that we are facing, we are given an ultimatum: either shape up or die out. Either face what is really happening, face the explosion of the human shadow in all of its violence and greed in all of these crises and really go through a major transformation, or face that if we don't, what we are preparing for ourselves is a massive extinction event, which is obviously on the horizon at the moment.
Yeah.
So unless we truly face the dark feminine and realize that her fury and her outrage and her majesty and her clarity are not only the result of divine anger, but also a tremendous wake-up call and a tremendous challenge for us to incarnate her virtues, the dark feminine virtues of holy outrage, of great clarity, of radical transformation. Unless we do this, we're going to die out. And for me, the great defining event of our time was the 9/11 collapse of the towers, the 9/11 terrorist event, because that really did show, I think, that we're living in a totally violent world, and was the first attempt to wake this culture up to the danger of pursuing world domination and the exploitation of nature. Think of what could have happened had President Bush not used this as an excuse to start two wars, but used it as an opportunity to open the arms of America to transformation and change. Think what an opportunity was wasted. And then think of all of the tragedies and disasters, including the one we're going through now, which is clearly a result of global warming. Think of how much of the horror and agony of these last years could have been avoided had we really woken up. What is going to happen, I think, is that we're going to be bitch-slapped again and again and again, and that we're going to go into a perfect storm of interrelated crises, which will either wake us up permanently to the danger of all of the kinds of visions of enlightenment and awakening and action in the world that we've followed up to now, or really secure our destruction. I think it is as serious and as obvious as that. Mm-hmm. That's what my book is dedicated to, trying to help people really get clear about, because I think the whole human future is now at stake.
It's a joy to have Andrew Harvey on today's program. He's best-selling author, architect of sacred activism, and yes, the book we're talking about is his new one, Radical Passion, Sacred Love and Wisdom in Action. We'll have much more right after this short break. Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. It's a joy to have Andrew Harvey on today's program. We're talking about his new book, Radical Passion, Sacred Love and Wisdom in Action. Andrew, early on in the book, you talk about the language of love, focusing on the great mystics, who I also have a fondness for. You include so many wonderful mystics in this chapter, but I would like to talk to you about one of my favorites. You've already quoted him, Rumi.
Yes.
In your introduction to the teachings of Rumi, you say, increasingly it will become clear that Rumi is not only humanity's supreme mystical poet, but also one of its clearest guides to the mystical renaissance that is trying to be born in the rubble of our suicidal civilization. Can you talk more about this mystical revolution and how Rumi's poetry can help to usher that in?
Well, I feel very deeply that the return of Rumi, the renaissance of Rumi, isn't a happenstance. It's a deep, deep blessing from the divine, because Rumi's poetry is born out of a tremendous evolutionary experience that he had with his great teacher, Shams of Tabriz. And there are fundamentally five aspects of the message of his poetry. The first is that Rumi is constantly, constantly waking all beings up to their inherent divine identity, constantly saying to us, have courage, be awake, realize that at the core of yourself, you are divine, and do not lose hope. Go forward with great faith. The second aspect is that Rumi is constantly evoking, through the glory of his imagery, the glory of the creation. For Rumi and for the great mystics of love, the creation is not an illusion. It is a flaming out of the grandeur and majesty and passion of the divine beauty. And unless you and I and everyone listening and everyone actually in the world now come to understand that we're in a divine world with a divine consciousness and with a divine responsibility to act to protect the creation, we're going to continue in our suicidal and matricidal policies and go on destroying ourselves and the creation. The third great revelation of Rumi's poetry and of his life is that is one of sacred relationship, because Rumi's whole realization didn't come on the top of a mountain or through prayer and meditation alone. It came through an extreme and extraordinary and extravagant and deeply, deeply painful and deeply, deeply beautiful love affair of the soul with another man, his great teacher and beloved Shams of Tabriz. And what this great relationship initiated him into was the understanding that the whole universe is, in fact, a web of intercommuning relationship, a whole web, a glittering universal web of relationship on every level and in every realm. Rumi wasn't just awoken to Shams as a divine being, although he knew that that was the great revelation of his life. He was awoken to the whole of creation as divine, to every being that he met as divine, and to animals as divine. Rumi adored animals, and animals adored him. And I think that in this great, great, sublime celebration of sacred relationship, we're given a great clue as how we can go forward at this time in sacred relationship with each other, in the sacred relationship with the creation, in the sacred relationship with animals, and in energized and deeply inspired by such a sacred relationship to start doing everything we can to start reversing the madness and bring in the new world. The fourth great message of Rumi is that he comes from his experience of the essential nature of evolution, which is that it passes through a dark night. In Christian and Islamic mysticism, in fact, in many mysticisms, it is known that the ego has to die in order for divine consciousness to be installed. And what I think I have become clear about over the last 20 years is that what is now happening on the planet is a global dark night whose laws we need to understand, because if we don't understand them, the kind of rending and kind of destruction that are bound now to take place will drive us mad, will drive us, in fact, to choose very dangerous solutions such as fascism or very great forms of destruction. So Rumi's vision of the dark night is something that has to be endured and understood so as to be able to lead into the birth of divine consciousness is crucial, I believe, for our survival. And the last and fifth aspect of this tremendous message that is coming through Rumi's work is of the great, sacred, radical, holy passion, energy, that is born in a being who has gone through this process. And my whole work and my whole book, Radical Passion, is dedicated to an exploration of what this radically passionate love energy can, at this late moment, accomplish. With it, we can still turn things around. Without it, we will be watching the destruction of the world on the TV, popping popcorn into our mouths and not doing a damn thing. It is essential that we listen to this greatest of all mystical poets of divine love and really learn the lessons that he's trying to teach us with such eloquence and nobility.
Yes, I remember in your book, The Hope, and in your lectures, you often talked about how we are creating a Coca-Cola.
Oh, God, yes. I wish that was all we were creating. We're totally dissociated, and we're totally sunk in denial, the majority of human beings. And while knowing that the environment is in free fall, while knowing that there are 2 billion people living on less than $1 a day, while knowing that 90% of the seas are now polluted, while knowing that the Amazon forests are burning down, we are still doing nothing serious, nothing to counteract this devastating destruction of the death machine. This is terrifyingly dangerous. And the only possibility for us now is to really let the divine awaken us, awaken to divine identity, awaken to the divinity of the creation, awaken to sacred relationship, awaken to the necessity of going through this global dark night so as to be able to birth ourselves in humble divine consciousness and awaken to radical passion and put that radical passion into urgent action in every realm of the world. This is the way through. And Rumi, for me, is the sublime and divinely appointed guide to this way through. And he's a guide that everyone of any religion can be thrilled by. I think that's his supreme achievement in a way, the supreme blessing that the divine gave him, that although he's a Muslim and a very devoted Muslim, the work that poured out of him is a work of universal divine love that anyone with half a heart can be thrilled and inspired by.
We're bringing love to life today with Andrew Harvey. We're talking about his newest book, Radical Passion, Sacred Love and Wisdom in Action. We have so much more. Stay with us. First, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Andrew Harvey. We're talking about sacred activism. We're talking about his newest book, Radical Passion, which is sacred love and wisdom in action. Andrew, in a chapter called Body of Love, in the introduction to this chapter, you say, "One of the deepest beliefs that has driven my outer work and inner search has been the belief that this chaotic era is preparing for the birth of a second axial age, which will correct the first axial age's noble obsession with transcendence." You talk about the need for a balance between this transcendence and a radial emphasis on the sacred feminine.
Yes.
Tell us why this is so critical to giving humanity direct access to a new level of sacred passion for all things.
Well, the first axial age, the age of Lao Tzu and the Buddha and the Upanishads and others, was an immense breakthrough for humanity because it initiated humanity into the direct relationship with the transcendent, with the divine light that creates everything. But it had several very, very dangerous consequences because this obsession with transcendence that first axial age made possible led us to a dropping of the world as sacred, to a devaluation of relationships, to a devaluation of what I would call the embodied Godhead, the Mother. The universe is essentially a sacred marriage on every level, a sacred marriage of masculine and feminine, spirit and matter, body and soul, prayer and action. Mm-hmm. And without the return of the full glory, power, majesty, outrage, and passion of the mother side of God, we are not going to have an authentic sacred marriage in our human imaginations and psyches, and we're going to go on destroying the whole creation through greed and exploitation with the return of the full feminine, the feminine in her glorious love and in her glorious nakedness and in her glorious outrage and in her glorious passion for justice. If we allow that full return to come into our hearts and minds and souls and bodies, it can inspire what I've called sacred activism, the fusion of deep, deep sacred knowledge with profound action on every level. And it's this holy force of sacred activism that I believe is destined to birth a wholly new humanity out of the chaos of our time. So the return of the divine feminine in its fullest sense is absolutely crucial. It's the key, it's the core, it's the call, it's the challenge, it's the enormous birthing possibility that is ahead of us if only we can grasp it in its fullness and enact it.
Mm. In your introduction to The Essential Mystics, you talk about Father Beattie Griffiths, somebody who was very important to you in your life. You tell a story about the mystic experience that changed his life. As a matter of fact, on page 185, you write, "Mystics in the all-world traditions testify to what Beattie Griffiths is here telling us of the scope and effect of the mystical experience. From them we come to know that what any authentic mystical opening brings us is a sense of wonder, a freedom from time's fury and anxiety, and a growing revelation of a far larger and more marvelous universe and a vast, far vaster identity than anything we could begin to intuit with our ordinary senses and consciousness." Can you talk a bit about what it means to experience this authentic mystical opening?
So difficult to talk about because it's so comprehensively amazing. But I think when I look back at the mystical experiences that have shaped my life, mm-hmm. there are three gifts that they give. The first is a radical initiation into a much larger self than the one who is living one's life normally, one's biography normally. You come to realize that the divine is living in you as you, and really feeling that gives you so much more spaciousness, so much more generosity, so much more compassion, and so much more faith and hope. The second thing that is given to you through a mystical experience is that you realize that you're in a divine world with other divine beings. Most of them are in drag, of course, and not really enacting their divine consciousness and pretending to be just human beings, greedy and exploitative. But you know that inherently they all have the same divine consciousness as you do, and that completely changes your reaction to them and the responsibility that you have after a mystical experience to be as wise and as canny and as helpful and as compassionate as you can possibly be, because you have woken up to your divine identity. You know that they are truly divine, but they don't yet know it, and that you have, therefore, a tremendous responsibility to live your life out in such a way that it can inspire people and help people come into the far larger identity that is offered them. And the third gift is that you are awoken to the glory of the creation. You realize that everything that is created, from the wildest whale to the stone to the flea, are all manifestations of one shattering divine light. Everything is soaked with this divine light. Everything is radiating from this divine light. And that brings you into a realm of amazement and wonder, which fuels a deep passion to protect the creation and to see that human egotism changes into divine human inspiration, so that we can co-create a wholly new way of being, doing everything, so that we can become what we were always meant to become, and what God, Divine Mother and Divine Father want us to become, which is co-agents of a new world. So it is a revolution in perception on every level, but it's a revolution that permanently gives you access to a huge new energy, a huge new love, a huge new faith, and a huge new hope, even in very extreme circumstances.
Well, I think you talk about that a little bit in your book, The Direct Path.
Yes.
A book I immensely enjoyed, very powerful book.
Thank you. It's a very revolutionary book, because basically it was saying you don't need religions anymore, and you certainly don't need gurus. What you need is to turn up in the relationship that's been given to you from the beginning of time, which is the direct relationship between your soul and the source, between your soul and the light. And I deeply believe that that is the future that we're going to see if we survive this next period and birth a new world, a whole world of motivated human beings who are discovering their divine identity in direct relationship, and so acting from a very new, empowered self on every level. This is very exciting, and it's worth going through whatever we have to go through in this next period to be midwives of this birth, because it is the next evolutionary stage for humanity, I'm convinced. It's possible. It's potentially here right now. Many people are living it. But we, many millions more, need now to wake up and live it and put it into sacred action so that the divine will for a wholly new humanity can be birthed.
I'm feeling this sense of heightened urgency in you from the first time I read your work on sacred activism, met you personally. This fire just continues to build for you. Is that an accurate observation?
Oh, God, yes. I think that we are very close to the defining evolutionary storm of our history. I wouldn't give us more than 3 or 4 years before all the crises that are exploding in the world come together in the kind of perfect storm that I've just been living through in New York. I think we're very, very close to the defining events of our whole evolutionary history. And unless people really get with it and really try and awaken and really start doing sacred practice and really start pledging themselves to forms of sacred action, the future for humanity looks very grim. But the hope is that we can still awaken, that there are people who are really looking around and seeing how there is absolutely no hope in the unsustainable society that we've created, that there's no hope in the group of corporate Leon politicians that dominate us, that there's no hope in any of the media and technological solutions that we've been given, but there is hope that springs from our divine consciousness, and that there is hope in the grassroots revolution of love and justice.
Mm-hmm.
So everything depends now on how far we can truly plunge into this mother fire and be inspired by it, this radical passion, and go forward.
You also share passages from heart yoga and your experience in developing that with Karuna Erickson. In fact,
yes,
in your interview with Michael Bertrand, you talk about the interconnectedness of your book, The Hope, with that of your book, Heart Yoga.
Yes.
It sounds like the concepts in both of these books fused together can create a very powerful life-altering practice. So please share a bit about why this can be such a powerful combination.
Well, when I wrote The Hope, I wanted to give a roadmap for sacred activism and the way in which I believe it can transform the planet. And one of the things that I write about in The Hope is how important it is to have a really radical, sacred, physical practice at this moment. And the reason for that is that the energies from the divine that are trying to incarnate in us at this moment to give us the chutzpah and the power and the grace and the energy to really set about changing the world need prepared bodies in order to be installed. Many years ago, I was approached by a pupil of mine, Karuna Erickson, who told me, look, if you continue to burn at this level of intensity, you're going to burn out, and that would be an absolute tragedy, and you're not in really in your body, so please get into it soon, because you've got to look after it. And then I realized that I was being told the truth, and she turned out to be an extraordinary yoga teacher, and over 5 years, what we did together was melt together and merge together and fuse together the traditional asanas with the mystical practices that I myself had learned from my immersion in Tibetan Buddhism and Hinduism and Christian mysticism and Sufism, most especially. Mystical practices that could help the light incarnate directly in the body. So the traditional asanas and these mystical practices together become an enormously powerful way of helping people to divinize the body so that it can become very, very strong. What's been extraordinary about the reception of heart yoga is that many of the great yoga teachers, Shiva Ray and Sean Corn and others, have recognized that this fusion of the traditional asanas with mystical light practices represents the next stage for yoga, a stage in which yoga can become not the place where people go to be fabulous and thin and look great in yoga clothes, but actually the crucible of the divine human body that is trying to be born as part of this great birth on the planet. And the reception to our book, Heart Yoga, has been incredibly heartening. And the results of people in the yoga community and activists and others doing heart yoga has always completely astonished Karuna and I, because we have felt the transformative changes, but you never know whether others are going to. And the results that we've experienced in our teaching and from letters all over the world have been really heartening. When we finished the book, we were in British Columbia, and just as we finished the book, there was this break of sunlight through the clouds, and a ray of sun went across the lake, which we were sitting above, and lit up the book that we'd finished. And it was a very extraordinary moment, because it was as if the divine was saying, yes, this is real, what you've discovered, and yes, it can help at this moment birth a new kind of human being, a human being who is open in the mind to divine revelation, who has a sacred heart that has been shattered open in sacred love, and who is also awake to the divine energies in the body and awakening them by humble sacred practice. So we were very thrilled, and I must say the reactions have proved that we weren't wrong and that there was a divine blessing on this vision. So it goes directly with The Hope, and I've been teaching it to activists all over the world, because one of the things that many things that activists need is a really profound and integrated sacred practice. They need cool practices so that they can stay calm in very difficult situations. They need heart practices so that they can keep their hearts alive in very painful situations. They need prayer practices so that they can constantly align themselves with the divine will that's trying to be enacted through them. And they need physical practices, because very often working at the kind of rate you have to work to get things through exhausts and burns out the body, and unless you have a very luminous and strong and nearly divinized body, you're just not going to be able to hack it. But with the body that's been trained by calming and illumining sacred practice, extraordinary feats of endurance are possible. They're going to be needed in the great evolutionary storm ahead.
You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show. It's a joy and honor to have Andrew Harvey, the architect of sacred activism, on today's show. We'll have much more after this break. Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendon. My guest is Andrew Harvey. We're talking about his new book, Radical Passion. In the last segment, Andrew, I talked about your interview with Michael Bertrand. As a matter of fact, on page 358 in that same interview, you share your desire to open up the sacred dance community as a crucible for divine birth in addition to yoga. In fact, you mentioned co-authoring a book with Gabrielle Roth that fuses her five rhythms with the five stages of Rumi's Ascent to Divine Love. Gabrielle was such a gift to the dance community.
Oh,
her recent passing is mourned by many. It would be great to release this in her honor.
Well, I'm hoping I can. We did quite a lot before she died, and of course it was very difficult to actually complete the book while she was going through that tragic last stage of her life, but she poured out her love towards me and a lot got done, so I'm hoping that in the next bit I will be able to get hold of the transcriptions of the work that we did and actually release it, because I think it will do for the dance community what I hope Karuna and I have been able to do for the yoga community. I'm also working with another very great dancer, Banafshe Sayyad, who I made a film with recently called In the Fire of Grace. Banafshe is the greatest living sacred dancer, I believe. She's Iranian, and we created this film, which was her dancing through all the different stages of Rumi's path to divine love, and it's been a huge success. It's really gotten out and really shown what a great sacred dancer could do. And Banafshe has a very extraordinary vision of divine passion. So I think that if it's not going to be possible to bring out what Gabrielle and I did, I think that I'd be able to do something similar with Banafshe for the dance community. So I'm hoping this will come out in the next bit.
There's a chapter entitled The Shadow of Love, The Dark Side of Guru Worship and the Essential Nature of Spiritual Discernment. From reading your previous works, I know you had a very personal experience with the guru that helped to propel your search for a more direct path to the divine. Can you share a bit about this experience and talk about the dangers of the guru worship and highlight why a direct path is ultimately much more fulfilling and authentic in a spiritual quest?
Well, I think the guru system, to do it justice, had a real purpose at one time. It kept alive, however difficultly and ambiguously, the truth of divine identity. But I believe now that what's trying to be born on the earth is a liberated human race, human beings who are in direct connection with the divine and who are liberated to be their complete human divine selves. This is what I believe the second coming of Jesus is. It's not the return of an avatar, a Star Wars avatar. It's the rising of the golden yeast of divine love consciousness in millions and millions and millions of human beings. I think the continuing reliance on the guru system on behalf of some seekers is a very dangerous thing, because the guru system is essentially a patriarchal system of authoritarian control. And as such, it partakes of the very paradigm that is now destined to be destroyed. The danger of believing that someone else is a divine being is that you project what I call your golden shadow onto him or her. And the golden shadow is all of those wonderful and holy and vibrant and energetic qualities that you yourself have, but don't want to have to do the extremely difficult task of work, of living out. You project that onto somebody, and you believe that just by worshipping them, you don't have to live them out yourself. And this is a very subtle way of evading your true sacred responsibility to become a divine human being and start becoming a sacred activist with other divine human beings and start truly renovating the world and saving us from extinction.
In the introduction to a section called The Suffering of Love, The Path of the Broken Heart, you talk about the greatest mystics being unafraid of the extreme suffering that evolutionary transformation demands because they know it's essential for authentic growth. You even talked about that earlier in our interview. You quote a poem by Rumi, and I love this poem. You write, Rumi writes, "Love comes with a knife, not with some shy question, not with fears for its reputation. Love is a madwoman roaming the mountains, tearing off her clothes, drinking poison, and then quietly choosing annihilation. You've been skirting the ocean's edge, hoisting up your robes to keep them dry. You must dive deeper, 1,000 times deeper.
Yes.
Powerful poem.
It's one of his greatest, most terrifying, most powerful poems, and it's one of his most realistic. He's just saying the kind of divine love that he and I are talking about is not something that is peaceful or sweet. It ends in peace and deep, deep tenderness, but really it comes with a knife to kill the ego. It comes with a knife at your throat saying, my God, are you really going to go on living this crazy, selfish life, this orgy of narcissism, or are you going to die? Are you going to die into love and become love's instrument in reality? And he really says the truth about love. He says, love is a madwoman roaming the mountains, working her wild schemes, tearing off her clothes, drinking poison, and then quietly choosing annihilation. The way in which mystics who have been truly inspired by divine love behave is absolutely outrageous. They step outside all known convention. They risk their lives again and again and again and again in honor of the beloved. And they don't just indulge in private games of narcissism like those instructed by The Secret. They risk their whole safety, security, because they know who they are in love with and they know what that love demands. It demands nothing less than a death into itself and then an absolutely humble service of its laws of justice and compassion and reality. And in those last three lines, I think Rumi's addressing the whole of the New Age. He's saying, you've been skirting the ocean's edge, hoisting up your robes to keep them dry. You must dive deeper, 1,000 times deeper. The New Age has had certain important achievements, but it has got lost in magical thinking, an orgy of narcissism, a deep, deep signing off from the reality of the horrific crisis that we're involved in, and a profound revulsion at doing anything. People talk up a blue streak about oneness, but where are they actually enacting this oneness and really fighting peacefully for justice and compassion? So Rumi's voice, I think, is so crucial in this. He's saying, if you want to be transformed into a divine human being, you're going to have to accept the degree of suffering that this means. And you're going to have to accept it as a lover accepts suffering, as a part of the work of love. And you're going to have to accept it because only such a profound suffering can burn away what in you is separate from God. And when you have been unified with the divine, you will understand that this suffering, however intolerable and awful and ghastly it might have seemed while it was happening, was the greatest of divine gifts to you because it prepared for you a wholly new kind of life.
The answer you just gave reminded me of an earlier conversation I had with you. You have been so passionate about bridging spirituality and activism, and you shared once how you would talk to deeply spiritual groups and they would be oming themselves to death, and you would be meeting with activists around the world and all they were caring about was just activism without the love. And I remember asking you, with your passion for sacred activism, which group seems to be responding the most to your message? And I remember you saying very quietly and very powerfully, those who are broken.
Yes.
And that's really what you're talking about.
I think that I thank you so much for remembering that. I think in my experience, those who really understand the message that I'm giving are those that life has already taken through a kind of crucifixion, those who have been shattered, those who have been heartbroken. because I think there is in very great suffering a very great divine revelation of a wholly new way of being that emerges from that suffering, that is the gift of that suffering if you can endure it. Those who are using spirituality as a kind of advanced form of heroin can't hear the message in heartbreak, and activists who have hatred for religion and for spirituality are therefore cutting themselves off from the major source of energy and inspiration and faith and hope and calm and peace and power. But those who have been shattered understand that you cannot go forward without faith, you cannot go forward without a spiritual practice, you cannot go forward without putting your deepest compassion into action. And it's those people who I'm convinced are the special forces of this great evolutionary change, and it's those people who are responding to my work. And I'm happy to say that the army of heartbroken lovers is growing on the planet.
I love that description. I'm having conversation today with Andrew Harvey. We're talking about his newest book. You'll want to pick up a copy, called Radical Passion. We'll have a little bit more right after this break.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. It's such a joy to have Andrew Harvey back on the program. We're talking about his great new book, Radical Passion. Andrew, I love the title called of the chapter called The Power of Love, Becoming a Sacred Activist in Service of Self, Other, the Planet, and the Divine. And at the very beginning, you write, "Only a global, grassroots, sacredly inspired movement of love in action can possibly be of any use now. Such a movement will not be able to prevent the collapse of the industrial civilization, but it will accomplish two related crucial tasks." Can you talk about those two crucial tasks and why they're so important to this evolutionary leap that humanity must take in order to survive?
Well, the two crucial tasks are, first of all, that a grassroots, sacredly inspired movement of love in action will mobilize and educate and refine what I call the special forces that are needed for the evolutionary leap that we must now take in order to survive. What is necessary on the planet is a group of very dedicated sacred activists. There don't have to be millions of them, but there have to be a significant number of them so that they can inspire a whole evolutionary leap, but they have to turn up as soon as possible. The second thing that this movement that I'm trying to inspire, and which is growing everywhere on the earth, is that I believe that only such a group of dedicated and fearless sacred activists can begin to create the social and spiritual structures that can survive the great storm of destruction that is ahead. We have to now build social, spiritual, economic, political structures that are able, with God's grace, to survive the biggest storm that is ahead. And only those who are simultaneously inspired by divine wisdom and love and activist-inspired can possibly be creators and midwives of such structures.
You share your introduction in this chapter to Philip Shepherd's book, New Self, New World.
Oh, yeah.
We recently had Philip on the show to talk about his compelling work. You talk about the great hope that he offers with this work of acknowledging wholeness we have so ignored as a culture. On page 506, you say, "The great hope that Philip Shepherd offers and that has clearly inspired him through all the long and lonely labor of creating his masterpiece is that the human race will wake up in time, will go on a journey into a new vibrant, embodied wholeness of heart, mind, soul, and body, and will birth in divinely inspired sacred action in and through divine grace and a new and far more just and harmonious world. Share more about this embodied wholeness and how it can ultimately contribute to the creation of that more just and harmonious world, which we so desperately need.
Well, I would like to take a step back and really say quite plainly what I think is happening.
Okay.
I think we're going through a massive evolutionary crisis, and that that crisis is exposing to us that all solutions, technological, political, social, economic, religious, that are taken from our current level of consciousness are doomed to fail. I think, too, that this great evolutionary crisis is what I call a global dark night, and when you go through a dark night, as every advanced mystic knows, it is a sign that a wholly new kind of birth is being prepared. What I believe, thirdly, is that this birth, this evolutionary birth, is the birth of a wholly new kind of human being, a divine human being. And that means a human being who is capable, through divine grace, of embodying the divine in an illumined mind, in a sacredly inspired heart, and in an increasingly divinized body. And this embodiment process is something that always happens through extreme crisis. And the global crisis that we're going through is, in fact, the birth canal of this new divine human being. What will happen when this new divine human being is born on a sufficient scale is that a wholly new level of response, which I call sacred activism, will be made available to humanity, because a truly divine and truly human being is someone with massive passion and compassion and energy and deep commitment to justice on every level. And so an army, a loving, peaceful army of such people, will be able to bring in a wholly new way of being and doing everything. This birth is going on. There are hundreds of thousands of people on the planet who are feeling the intense truth of this embodiment process. I am feeling it myself. And my great teacher, Father Bede Griffiths, was someone who was visibly transfigured as a divine human being when he lived. So I know it's here, and I know it's possible, and I know it's potential, and I know it's possible for us all. What we now need to do is, I believe, as I say throughout my book, Radical Passion, is to really understand that this birth will mean a revolution. It will mean a revolution in our understanding of the divine feminine. It will mean a revolution in our understanding of enlightenment as not a going out into the light, but an embodiment of the light. And it will mean a revolution in our understanding of what activism is, because an activism that isn't fueled by sacred consciousness, sacred passion, sacred wisdom, sacred awareness, will simply not be able to deal with the problems that are facing us. But an activism that is fueled by those things will be divinely blessed, divinely inspired, and be able to achieve what seems like miraculous results in very extreme circumstances.
I want to encourage our listeners to visit your web address. There they will find your body of work, the books you have written and will be writing. Also, which we haven't had time to talk about, the Institute for Sacred Activism, which I'm most excited about, and we must have you back on to talk just about that. Give us your web address, Andrew.
It's andrewharvey.net. And if you go to it, you'll see that there is an initiation coming up in Nashville in January of people who really want to go through the whole process of becoming a sacred activist. So if you've been excited by what I've said, and if you're excited by my work, please look up my website and come and join us. We'd be thrilled to have you.
Andrew, it's an honor to have you on the program, and thank you again for not only the gift of your presence, but the gift of another beautiful book.
Bless you. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for taking the trouble to read this massive book as generously as you have. It really moves me, and it's a huge blessing to me. Thank you very, very much.
Once again, Andrew's website is andrewharvey.net. And I'll have some final thoughts, but first, here's Jewel with Life Uncommon.
Don't worry, Mother. It'll be all right. Don't worry, Sister. Say your prayers. Sleep tight. And it'll be fine. Lover of mine, it'll be just fine. Lend your voices only to sounds of freedom. No longer lend your strength to that which you wish to be free from. Feel as with love and bravery, and you shall lead a life uncommon. I've heard your anguish, I've heard your heart's cry out. We are tired, we are weary, but we are.
This day, may we remind one another that all life is precious. May we appreciate and honor life and do everything in our power to protect all life. May we be in awe of the wonder of life in all its forms and teach our children to respect it in all its manifestations, helping them to see the beauty of this earth and its inhabitants. May we all have radical passion. And that's today's program. Our website is richardbrenton.org. This has been a Journeys Fire production. So for engineer Joe Bainline and production coordinator Monica Tennell, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.